Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Why do the majority of people in the polls not support Obamacare?
Actually, I think it's pretty evenly...
It's close.
And now, to honor America, five-time Grammy Award winner, Christina Aguilera.
Oh, say, can you see? What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous path.
I turn it off. It's pathetic. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Apparently, we're living in an age where the people they hire to sing the national anthem don't even know the lyrics. So let's talk about a number of things today on Blue Monday. There was a big interview over the weekend, the Super Bowl of interviews, where Bill O'Reilly interviewed President Obama. Now, at the risk of sounding jealous or bitter, I'm going to ask a simple question. The simple question is this. Do you think the leprechaun ruined his career with this interview? Do you think that the leprechaun strengthened or weakened his credibility with his viewers on Fox News? What didn't B.O. ask B.O.? Is there any difference between B.O. and John McCain? Will Obama soon invite prominent so-called conservatives to the White House? Who do you think will accept? Now, these are important questions because as O'Reilly interviewed Obama, it turned into a series of softball questions that were custom-made to make Obama look good. The leprechaun did not ask one word about illegal immigration. He didn't ask one word about Obama's betrayal of the UK's nuclear secrets. He didn't ask one word about why we're still in Afghanistan. Instead, he asked him kind of softball questions. What's most interesting to me, and here's the take-home message for the day, is this. The president said that in Egypt he wants the people to be respected. In Egypt, he wants the will of the people to be respected with regard to their choice of a ruler, and he wants Mubarak to be gone. And yet O'Reilly didn't ask why the president refuses to respect the will of the people here in the United States of America. The will of the people in America, after all, have said no to Obamacare, end the war in Afghanistan, fire the czars, lower taxes, stop the illegal immigration, stop the flow of drugs. And yet the president, who's so interested in the will of the people being enforced in Egypt, mainly the will of the Islamic people and mainly the will of the violent Islamic Brotherhood, is not interested at all in the will of the people of the United States of America. And I think that was a grave oversight on the part of Bill O'Reilly, although I'm not surprised by it. And the reason I'm surprised is that, look, in order to get an interview like this, you know there are ground rules, and the rules are very simple. The questions are set up in advance, as you would expect. You wouldn't expect O'Reilly to insult the president. I wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't. But if he's supposedly the standard bearer for the conservatives in America, I doubt very much if he considers himself that, why did he not ask the main questions? Illegal immigration, not one question of the president. The war in Afghanistan, not one question of the president. Obamacare rejected by the majority of the people, really, he made it sound as though it was a split decision. And so, as I say, Fox News made a deal with the president, and that's why we have that kind of interview. But I'm going to ask you again, without sounding as though I'm sour grapes or what, I'm asking you a simple question. If you're a listener to the Savage Nation and you watch Fox News, and I'm not going to feed you words, do you think the leprechaun ruined his career with this interview? I really shouldn't say that he ruined his career because it wasn't ruined. I'm just asking you if he weakened his credibility. Because a career and credibility are not one and the same. All you've got to do is look at the rest of the channels and see how far people can go on lies. Now let's talk about lies and hypocrisy. The glorious First Lady, allegedly more beautiful than Jackie Onassis, classier than Jackie Onassis, more honorable than Martha Washington, the First Lady frequently lectures people on eating healthfully. She lectures children to eat carrot sticks. Let them eat carrot sticks. And yet, have you seen the menu that was served at the White House yesterday for the Super Bowl? Would you like to hear it? And this is from a White House that lectures you on health foods. Here it is. Bratwurst, kielbasa, cheeseburgers, deep dish pizza, buffalo wings with sides of German potato salad, twice-baked potatoes with cream, assorted chips and dips, pale ale and amber ale, lager and light, all brewed for the White House. So the First Lady tells us to eat carrot sticks and then serves us junk food at the White House or serves junk food at the White House. It's the same with O'Reilly. He serves up a conservative fare, a putative conservative fare. He wraps himself in the flag. But when you look at it, really, is it any different than the government media complex at any level? So look, I'm not going to make this into a big deal. The fact of the matter is I have enough enemies in the world. I don't need more. But it's almost impossible in a world filled with lies to not talk about them and not talk about the hypocrisy. It's nauseating. And the fact of the matter is, I watched a little bit of the interview because I was impressed that Fox News was able to get an interview with President Obama, given that Obama's our first Marxist-Leninist president. I thought there would be a fair debate between a Marxist-Leninist and, let's say, a centrist. Let's call O'Reilly a centrist. We don't have to call him a conservative. I don't think he identifies as such. But wouldn't you think that a president who's getting up there and trumpeting reform in Egypt, calling for the overfall of Mubarak, calling for the will of the Egyptian people to be listened to, wouldn't you think that would have been a golden opportunity for a centrist like Bill O'Reilly to say, but Mr. President, if you're interested in the will of the people being heard in Egypt, why are you not interested in the will of the people being heard in America? Tell us about the war in Afghanistan. I think the last poll I checked, meaning me, it was something like over 70% opposed the war in Afghanistan, myself included. Obamacare, it's something like 68 to 70% of the American people oppose Obamacare. So you go down the list, illegal immigration, 70% of the people oppose illegal immigration, if not more, if you eliminate illegal immigrants from the polling. So the fact of the matter is none of these questions were really asked. And I think the whole interview was set up to make Obama even more popular than he is because, as a British observer has written, Obama is using the media like a yo-yo or something to that effect. That's absolutely true. And I believe O'Reilly has now become part of that yo-yo. So I'll turn it over to you. And there are other things. There's other things I want to talk about on the show today, a lot of other things. A big story broke on Friday afternoon that has been completely ignored by the press. I was hoping Bill O'Reilly would mention it, but of course, my hopes are never transferred into dreams. Rather, only transferred into dreams. They're rarely transferred into reality. But over the weekend, we learned that Barack Hussein Obama betrayed Britain to appease the Russians over the new START treaty. What he did was Obama gave away to the Russians sensitive information on Britain's nuclear deterrent to persuade the Russians to sign a key treaty when he really didn't have to do that. This is an astonishing betrayal of America's closest friend and ally. He gave away the codes on all of the Trident missiles that we manufacture in America and give to Britain. Britain definitively did not want the Russians to know how many Trident missiles they had, and they would not give up these code numbers. Obama went behind the Brits' backs and gave out these code numbers to the Russians. Now, I want to ask you a question. Here's the question. If a mere soldier, if a mere corporal, or a private, or a sergeant, or a captain, guarding these nuclear codes, were to have been found or caught transferring the code numbers for dollars, do you think that he would have gotten away with it? Do you think he would have served a life sentence? Do you think he would have faced the death penalty? What would he have faced if he was caught giving up these secrets? I'll let you figure it out. I'll be right back. Savage.
Federal judge in Florida said new health care law is unconstitutional. Supreme Court may follow in that. It's going to be very close. Are you prepared for that law to go down?
Well, I think the judge in Florida was wrong. But here's the key point, Bill. And I said this in the State of the Union. I don't want to spend the next 2 years refighting the battles of the last 2 years.
Well, let's pause right here. Now, if Bill O'Reilly had done his homework, He would have said, yes, but Mr. President, I want to remind you that you are only the president. You're not a dictator. You may not want to fight the battle that you fought for the last 2 years all over again, but I want to remind you that this is a government of limited power, and you have limited power. And the fact of the matter is, if O'Reilly had done his homework a little more, he would have cited the Schechter Brothers case where FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of Obama's mentors, passed a draconian, over-the-top, centralized power law way, way back when, and he even put in jail a couple of Jewish kosher butchers who didn't want to follow the law for religious reasons. When they got out of jail, they got a lawyer and they sued FDR. It went to the Supreme Court. FDR was overturned. And the great judge, Brandeis, I believe, came out and said that will be an end to your centralization. That was a liberal Supreme Court justice, Brandeis, when liberal meant something. So you see, O'Reilly could have said if he wanted to, you may not want to fight the battle of the last 2 years all over again, but you overreached, and when it comes to the Supreme Court, you may have to see your power limited. But he didn't say that. And that's why I say it's very important to read between the lines, and you got to understand that a lot went on this weekend. But I want to get back to a bigger issue than a talk show host, which is the Obama administration betraying Britain to appease the Russians over the new START treaty. This is an astonishing breach of, well, you could fill in the word. I want to ask you again. Britain refuses to confirm the exact size of its nuclear arsenal. For security reasons, Britain does not want Russia to know how many missiles it has. The U.S. supplies Trident missiles to Britain. Obama, behind Britain's back, it comes out through WikiLeaks cables, by the way, goes and gives the code numbers to the Trident missiles that we're giving to Britain. Therefore, screwing the Brits behind their back. Again, I have to put this in context. If a lowly guard, a soldier, a corporal, guarding the Trident missiles, knew the code numbers and was found transferring them to a foreign power, he would probably face life in prison, if not more. It is treason. So you say, technically it isn't treason, because he violated Britain's nuclear secrets, not ours. So how could you try him for treason? The answer is because they're our Trident missiles. They're our codes. President or not president, he has no right to violate our own law. And he went around the law in order to get the START treaty passed because the liberals, the radical leftists, the communists who put him in power, want America's nuclear secrets, or shall I say our nuclear arsenal, limited. I'm blue in the face over this because no one's covering it. And so, therefore, as I say, you know, I checked my birth certificate last week, and when I woke up in the morning, and I said, where is it written that I, a mere talk show host without access to any power whatsoever, where is it written that I have to worry about such important things? Where is it written that I have to get up every day and carry the world on my shoulders? Where is it written that I have to save Western civilization from the Muslim Brotherhood? Where is it written that I have to do any of these things? The answer is it's not written anywhere. I'm sick of it all. I am sick that the media has become nothing but a compliant tool of Obama. And if you needed any further proof, you got it yesterday before the Super Bowl. I admit O'Reilly sounded weak. I admit he was scared. I admit his voice sounded tinny. I get it. He was frightened. And his voice sounded frightened. But that's okay. Even in the midst of a fright, you can do the people's work if you want to retain your credibility. And I would argue that he did not retain his credibility at all. And I would say to you again, he could have answered Obama in many different ways and many different questions, but I'm not him, and he's not me. But let's start at the top. Why did O'Reilly not ask one question about illegal immigration? Why did O'Reilly not ask the president one question about the Afghanistan war, why we're not out of there? Why, oh, why, oh, why? The answer is because it's given in the question. That's why. That's all. New York, Michael, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
First of all, the national debt rose $105 billion in January, and O'Reilly didn't question him on that. He didn't question him. 40 million people are on food stamps. 15 million people are unemployed. I mean, 50%, like you said, is...
You know that Obama's poll numbers have been rising because he's manipulating these puppets, like O'Reilly, to his benefit. You know that.
Going up, Mike?
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. Sacramento, Walt, you're on the Savage Nation. Next up, go ahead, please.
Obama once again shows his true colors with the way that he's been so deceptive with Britain. But I had resolved not to listen to any more interviews with this turkey, but I listened against my better judgment to O'Reilly. Did you notice how shifty-eyed and uncertain of himself he was?
He was very nervous. I heard his voice. Look, I'm an expert on voice recognition. I'm in the business of voices. Remember, the callers only come to me through voice, right? And you only hear me through voice? He was frightened going in. And that's okay. It's a very intimidating situation to interview a president when the president has all the control. And God only knows what controls they put on O'Reilly before he even got that interview. We know by the questions that everything was pre-planned, and that's understandable. He is the president of the United States. With all due respect, he has all the power in the world. This is quite a seminal moment in journalism for him to sit down putatively with his enemy when we saw it was nothing but a PR event.
Angered by Obama, but I was frustrated and embarrassed for O'Reilly. He's no more a spokesman for even the Republicans, let alone the conservatives, than I am.
Well, I would say he was a good Republican. My argument would be a little different. I'd say he's very much like McCain. And I think that O'Reilly and McCain are two peas in a pod. Nothing more and nothing less. And that says an awful lot. But Obama got the best of O'Reilly because O'Reilly was set up to make him look good. That's the way it works. Klamath, Oregon. Greg, next up, your opinion, please.
O'Reilly's a sellout at this point, especially if you compare it to what he portrayed himself to be, say, 5-6 years ago. I would encourage people of the Savage Nation who take this serious and love their country to quit taking this O'Reilly guy serious on anything. He's lost his...
Well, you know, about 10 years ago, O'Reilly was on my show with a book of his when he was still talking to me before he saw me as too big of a competition. And we talked behind the scenes on the microphone, and I said something to him. He said something to me. You know what he said to me? He said, yeah, but you have a niche audience. I want a bigger audience than you have. Well, I guess he has a bigger audience now. He has the Super Bowl audience. He has the kielbasa eaters. What can I do about it? Nothing. All I can do is sit here and call him as I see him. I mean, all I'm giving you is one man's opinion. And it's further proof that not only that money can't buy happiness, but fame cannot buy honesty.
Savage.
You don't want the Muslim
Egyptian people. What I want is a representative government in Egypt.
What is their ideology? I mean, someone like Sheikh Yusuf Kardawi, the spiritual leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, who's based in Qatar and appears in Al Jazeera all the time, he talks about, we will reconquer Rome. We will retake Europe. I mean, that's the kind of language and ideology coming out of the Muslim Brotherhood.
So O'Reilly asks if Obama wants the Muslim Brotherhood to be part of the new Egyptian government. And Obama says he wants a representative government in Egypt without even knowing who the Muslim Brotherhood is. Most of us don't know what that means, but now you just heard a little bit about who they are and what it means. You heard that one of the leaders says that they even want to reconquer Rome. And with little help from Fox News, they may reconquer New York, that's for sure. We are talking about the weekend. We're talking about the sellout of Britain by Obama. A major story. If any other president had done this, I believe at any other time, there would have been a call. You know, let's put it this way. When I heard the story on Friday, and I went on the air with it, about what Obama did to the Brits, behind their back, it came out, remember, through WikiLeaks cables. Obama didn't want this information released. It's of huge importance to the world that Obama stabbed Egypt in the back, stabbed Israel in the back, stabbed Tunisia in the back, stabbed Britain in the back. Tell me who Obama has been loyal to other than to his cause. And his cause is international Marxism. That is my allegation. Again, I want to say to you, I am powerless. I have no control or power whatsoever. He has all the power in the world, and I recognize the power he has, and I recognize and respect the office of the presidency. But the fact of the matter is, I have a job to do. And my job is to be a glorious pain in the butt to people in power and to try to keep them somewhat in line, or else there will be a dictatorship in this country. I have never said it more clearly. I've used other words. I put it in other terms. I've said that the media has one job, which is to be the watchdog, not the lapdog. And here we saw O'Reilly clearly becoming a little yapper and a lapdog for the government media complex. I wasn't surprised by that. You know, for years I've called O'Reilly the leprechaun, and I didn't mean anything by it. I thought it's a funny name. For years I called Chris Matthews softball. But there's a new holder to the honorary title softball. It's now Bill O'Reilly, while Chris Matthews has now lost the title of softball. He's now known as Screwball. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Look, you're the callers to the show. Let me start again. Obama gives away the codes to the Trident missiles behind Britain's back, and he gives them to Russia to get them to sign the START Treaty. They got everything they wanted and more in the START Treaty. There was no need to sign the START Treaty. This is a college hippie view of the world. Take apart our nukes. We've got plenty of nukes. End the war. Put a daisy in an M1. Spend the money on night basketball. Health care for all. Housing for all. Cut the Defense Department. End the nukes. Cut down the nukes. Yay, Berkeley all the way. So now we have the equivalent of a starry-eyed junior professor from Berkeley in the White House who pushes the agenda of a far-left professor to a treaty with Russia that we didn't need. They needed it. And then to top it off, he stabs England in the back and gives away the Trident nuclear codes. When this happened on Friday, all I could do was thinking about it all weekend. I was agitated all weekend. And I was saying to myself, if we lived in a participatory democracy, I really mean a parliamentary democracy, there would have been a call for a new government today by the opposition party. There would have been a call today for an election. And I can guarantee you that Obama's party in a parliamentary system would have fallen by the end of the week because of this scandal. But we live in a dictatorship of two parties. It's a game. Don't you understand that? Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter which one of the parties is in charge. It's two-card Monty, only there's no P under the pod. It doesn't matter which one of them are running it. They're running it the same way with a little bit of window dressing. So I was agitated all weekend. Then on Sunday, all right, so I turn on the interview a little bit. I said, all right, let's see how he does. The first thing I noticed, his voice was very, very shaken. He was frightened, intimidated, understood. Understood this was a big step for him. He started with Entertainment Tonight, and the next thing you know, he's entertaining the president. I mean, it's a big step. It's sort of like Woody Allen being invited to see the Queen. You know what I'm saying? That's a big job to go there and be. Oh, I understand that he's a little nervous. But he can't then go back on the air tonight on Fox News and pretend he did a good job. He didn't do a good job. He was used as a tool of the government. And that was the deal that was made between Roger Ailes and the presidency about a year ago when they had a big fight, that they would give them access if they went easy on him. I didn't know it would come to this, by the way. And again, I have no influence. You know, 8 to 10 million people a week is a lot of people. But I don't have Fox News and that organization behind me. I don't have the News Corporation behind me. I don't have the PR organization behind me. But it finally came to me as to why they wouldn't have Michael Savage on Fox News ever. I don't want to be on. Let me be very clear. I don't do TV, and that's the end of it. You're never going to see me on TV. Never. I've turned down bigger interviews than Fox News over the last year when I had the British band. Believe me, I turned down 2020 many times. I have respect for them, but I don't want to be subjected to them because they control what comes out. They don't control what I say. They control how they cut it up. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. Unless they give me the final cut, which they never would, I'm never going on TV again. Ever. And I'm not going to be used as a stooge of the left. The left controls the media from top to bottom. We have a far-left president who uses Fox News as the putative opposition to sell himself as a centrist. I have an obligation. I have a job to do. I am paid to do my job, and my job is simply to be an observer from my point of view. This, again, is one man's opinion. Everything you've heard today, everything you hear every day on this show is my opinion and my opinion alone. No one coaches me, no one edits me, no one tells me what I can say or what I can't say, and I try to speak to my audience as clearly as I would to my family. And I am telling you, I am terrified by the state of our union. I am terrified by our president's deceits. I am terrified by the complicity of the United States media. I am most terrified by the danger we are in as a result of them overthrowing friendly Arab governments who have all been turned into the worst dictatorships on the planet. And I want to say this again. I have never in my life seen a collusion between a government and a media as I have in the last few weeks, where this government under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and God knows who else, probably George Soros, all colluded to overthrow these friendly Arab governments, and suddenly they were painted as the worst dictatorships on the planet, when you and I both know Iran is 100 times worse. Why is it that Iran is spared from their wrath? How is it that all these brave big mouths in the media have nothing but praises for Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time? When Ahmadinejad comes in, they practically lick his hands. They practically lick his boots. They have nothing negative to say about him. And what about our friends in China? You're telling me that's not a dictatorship? You're telling me that they don't do things to people? It's freedom of the press in China? Then you know nothing. I've never seen anything quite like this. And the danger here is that we're going to get it next. We're very, very close to losing everything, all of our freedoms in this country. And believe me, it doesn't happen overnight. It does not happen overnight. It happens in stages. And I am seeing almost a quantum leap in the loss of truth and therefore the loss of liberty. Because truth and liberty are almost the same. Incidentally, truth and liberty are not cousins. They are Siamese twins. And when you start losing truth at every level in a country, you're going to lose liberty as sure as I'm sitting here. They are not cousins. They're Siamese twins. And I see nothing but deceit at every level. I'm only one man. I'm only one man sitting here on the second story with my arms on a windowsill, looking down on the street and seeing the passerbys go by. I see this happening, I see that happening, and I observe. I observe, and then I get on the air, and I tell it to you the way I see it. I call them like I see them. I don't have an agenda unless you call patriotism an agenda. I have no agenda unless you believe in America, then I have that as my agenda. I am not an internationalist. I am not a socialist. I am not a communist. I am not a fascist. I am an American. And my credo is very simple. It has been from 1994 when I began in radio. Borders, language, culture. Now let's go back to O'Reilly to Fox News. Why did he not ask one question about borders or immigration? Why did he not ask one question about multiculturalism or language? Why did he not talk once about any of our cultural attributes? Well, I think the answer is in the question. That's the end of the story. Now I'm going to move on. If you want to call on this, you can. You know the number. It's all up on michaelsavage.com. Here's a sad story that is related to a loss of pride as a result of a loss of dignity, as a result of a loss of self-respect. Over the weekend, Jean-Paul Getty III died, and the headline is "Proof That Money Can't Buy Happiness: Jean-Paul Getty III Destroyed by His Family's Billions." This is the kid who had his ear cut off way back in the 1970s or 80s. He had his ear cut off. This was a kid who was condemned to a life in a wheelchair ever since 1981, and when at age 24 he was crippled by a stroke caused by a self-induced drug overdose, and no amount of money, believe me, billions of dollars could make him well again. It's a very sad story. He had to be spoon-fed. He had to be dressed. He had to be bathed around the clock by nurses. He couldn't see properly. Couldn't walk. He couldn't speak. He could only communicate by a high-pitched scream. It was a tragedy. How did this happen? Drug overdose. The drug overdose of Jean-Paul Getty III came just 8 years after he was kidnapped, held for 5 months in a cave in northern Italy, ransomed and released only after his severed and rotting right ear arrived in the mail. Incidentally, there was a postal strike at the time in Italy, and the ear languished in the Rome sorting office for 3 weeks, which is why the ear was rotten. This weekend, he died at the Getty family mansion in Buckinghamshire, and it marks the latest installment, not only of his own cursed life, but in the desperately sad story of the House of Getty. And there's a story that has to be told within the story. And I will tell the story as I read it to you here on the Savage Nation for a number of reasons. Not only proof, again, that money cannot buy happiness, but that fame cannot buy honor. O'Reilly did not understand what he just did over the weekend. Whatever honor he may have had, he threw away over the weekend for a few moments of fame. He threw it away, threw his honor away. His audience may grow, he may make more money, he may get bigger interviews, but he threw away his honor. He has no respect left in this country amongst those who really know what's going on. And this is tied into the Getty story. He is a kid who inherits a fortune and throws it away. Why? What was he looking for? Well, let's look at it. 54 years old, he dies. He was heir to one of the world's largest fortunes. Who was he? He was grandson to Paul Getty, the late oil baron. He was a billionaire, the grandfather was, a miser. And his father was Sir Paul Getty II, the philanthropist who gave more than £140 million to good causes but refused to pay his eldest son's medical bills. Did you know that? This family is cursed with tragedy and self-destruction and abuse. They were all born with golden ladles in their mouth, and they all choked on them. How did it start? It all started with the grandfather, Paul Getty. He was once the richest man in the world, but he installed a payphone for his guests in the hallway of his Surrey mansion. He used only secondhand envelopes for his mail, and he once made a group of friends wait outside a dog show for 15 minutes so they could get in for half price. They say he was as ungenerous with his love as he was with his money. The young Paul, his son, that's the dead boy's father, rarely saw his father during his first 23 years. His letters to his father were returned unanswered, but all of his spelling mistakes were carefully underlined and corrected by his billionaire father. And if they went out and dined together once in a while, his father would deduct the cost of the meal from his pocket money. But they were also terrible parents. How did it start? Well, things started well. In 1956, at age 24, Paul Getty married Gail, his childhood sweetheart and a former water polo champion. Jean-Paul III was born the same year, after which his family moved to Rome, where Paul headed Getty Oil's Italian operations. Paul and Gail were very much the young power couple all over the town of Rome, flirting and flitting around from party to party. But soon it all broke down. Soon Paul's head was turned by other women, by alcohol and hard drugs. The marriage broke down in 1975 after being cut off by the father. The father said, no, Getty will be a drug addict. He married Talitha Paul, the beautiful and unstable step-granddaughter of a painter. Already spiraling into addiction, the pair went to Morocco, where Paul bought a mansion called the Pleasure Palace. He hosted Roman-style orgies, and he was said to have consumed a bottle of rum and a gram of heroin each day. Incidentally, he lived like a rock star, partied like a rock star, and was a friend of the degenerate scum, known as rock stars. Broken and exhausted by all the partying, his wife, Talitha, then killed herself with a heroin overdose while her husband lay next to her in bed. What happened next? Jean-Paul III then went off the rails. He had been abandoned by his father and deprived of a role model when he was 9 years old, and by the age of 15, he had already been expelled from 7 schools, regularly took drugs, and posed naked for a sex magazine. He had also had numerous older lovers, had been arrested for hurling a Molotov cocktail during a left-wing demonstration. Did you catch that? Billionaire's son, left-wing demonstration. And had smashed up countless cars and motorbikes. Okay? Then, July 10th, 1973, he was 16 years old. He's abducted in Rome by a gang of Calabrian bandits. They demand a ransom of about 11 million pounds. Since the father had already been cut off from the grandfather's billions, the amount of money asked was beyond his means, and the miserly billionaire grandfather refused to pay a penny, saying, I have 14 other grandchildren, and if I pay one penny now, then I will have 14 kidnapped grandchildren. So he didn't do it. So what happened? So the grandson, Jean-Paul III, who died over the weekend, was kept in a cave in the mountains of Calabria. He was chained to a stake. He wrote desperate letters to his mother in his large, childish handwriting. He was beaten and tortured for 5 months. Then his Italian captives cut off his right ear with a razor and no anesthetic, and they sent it along with a tuft of his hair and a typewritten note to the offices of one of Rome's biggest daily newspapers. Getty Sr., the grandfather, finally offered £2.1 million to the kidnappers, but only on the strict condition that his son repay him in full plus 4% interest. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A lot of Americans feel that you're a big government liberal who wants to intrude on their personal freedom. Now, they also say that you've been moving. No, that's what. Yeah, come on, you know that.
I think a lot of folks who watch you, Bill, believe that.
They think way worse than me. I mean, believe.
And I give you credit. You got a pretty big viewership. So you've been persuasive.
All right. So there's the setup interview between President BO versus BO. And not one question on illegal immigration, not one question about the Afghanistan war, not one question about the debt. Not one question about five of the major topics that are plaguing the American people. And the biggest question to me is the president states he wants democracy to rule in Egypt. He wants the majority will to be expressed in Egypt. If I were doing the interview, I would have asked it very respectfully, Mr. President, you want the majority to rule in Egypt, and yet the majority in America have voted no to Obamacare. They voted no to increasing the debt ceiling. They're against the Afghan war, and yet you persist in pushing forward your views on these issues. Where's the representative government here? But we didn't hear any of that, did we? And that's why I'm saying something's wrong with this whole picture. We're also, at the same time, I'm reading the story about Getty, the Getty son who died tragically over the weekend. I mean, I don't know that it's tragically when you would see how this poor guy suffered so long. And you say, well, he suffered at his own hand. Doesn't matter. Suffering is suffering. 1981, he's over there, and now he's in Hollywood. He's cut off from the family's trust. And he takes more solace in drugs and alcohol. 1981, he has an affair. He took an overdose that leaves him a paraplegic. He remains in a coma for 6 weeks. When he regained consciousness, I'm not talking about Bill, I'm talking about John Paul III. When he regains consciousness, the damages to his nervous system are revealed. He's nearly blind, unable to speak, and he's paralyzed. Everything was gone, said Bill Newsom, his godfather. Does the name ring a bell? Bill Newsom? Bill Newsom? Everything except his mind. He was 24 years old. Even then, the Gettys and all their billions failed him. His mother, Gail, took him in, but she couldn't afford the $25,000 a month medical bills. And his father, who himself emerged from his drugs haze to become a raving Anglophile philanthropist and knight, he was invested as a knight in 1996 after becoming a British citizen. You can buy anything in England. Refused to help, claiming his son had brought it all on himself. You hear this? The father wouldn't help his own son, saying, "Of you." Not the father didn't, though, at that time. So then, after suing his father, he then wins and he gets some money, moves into a specially adapted house in Beverly Hills with a full staff and hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of medical equipment hidden discreetly behind sleek wooden doors. And he lives there for 30 years and he dies over the weekend. Horrible. A terrible, terrible tragedy. All as a result of, I would say, a lack of love, which led to the use of drugs. And, of course, a lack of fatherly love. I mean, a junkie is not born. Generally, a junkie is not born. A junkie is made. That's been my observation. Junkies are not born. They're made. Very rarely are junkies born. They're often made. I want you to think about that. How money can't buy happiness and how fame cannot buy honor.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You've changed a little bit since you've become president.
Well, I'm a lot grayer, that's for sure. Well,
every president does that. But do you think you have changed as a person since you have become president?
I think if you ask Michelle, who knows me best, I think, or my closest friends, I think they'd say I'm basically the same guy as when I came in.
Will you actually watch the game? Because I know you have a big party tonight. J-Lo is going to be here.
I schmooze with everybody when they come.
Yeah.
Give them a little bit of time, but once the game starts, they can just sit down and watch the
and
game.
And you're out of there.
Well, no, I'll be sitting there with them, but I don't want them coming up chitting and chatting.
Well, speaking of chitting and chatting, instead of serving carrot sticks and healthy vegetables grown in the White House Victory Garden, the first family served bratwurst, kielbasa, cheeseburgers, deep dish pizza, buffalo wings, potato salad, twice-baked potatoes, potato chips, pretzels, chips and dips, salad and ice cream. That's a very healthy menu, isn't it? So it's not do as I do. It's not do as I do. It's do as I say. In other words, I say let them eat carrot sticks. And there we are. Now, in the first hour on the Savage Nation tonight, we've talked about Bill O'Reilly's interview with Barack Obama. And it's my allegation that it was a softball interview because he didn't ask one question about illegal immigration, the war in Afghanistan, or the national debt. I mean, the many other issues. I would say that if you took the pulse of the American people, they want us out of Afghanistan, they want the debt ceiling controlled, they don't want it raised, and they want illegal immigration curtailed, if not eliminated. Yet not one of these questions came up. It was the same as years ago during the presidential debates when the NPR, baggy-eyed Bolshevik, used to ask set-up questions during presidential interviews. So instead of the baggy-eyed Bolshevik, Bill Lehrer, we now have Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly is the new Bill Lehrer, or whatever his first name is. Which, again, it doesn't mean I hate him. I don't. It's not the point. The point is, I gave a speech years ago, beware the government media complex. And believe me, you should beware of it, because the government media complex has never been stronger than it is today. Again, I need to repeat this over and over again. That is, I have a job to do. My job is to call him as I see him. Admittedly, I make a lot of people very angry. Some of them hate me for my views. But either we live in America or we don't live in America. Either we live in a free society or we don't live in a free society. Either I have freedom of the press or freedom of speech or I don't. And so therefore, until it's illegal to express my opinion, I will express my opinion. I recognize the office of the presidency has all the power in the world. If they could burn a country to the ground to enforce their agenda, what is one man to them? If they're willing to blow up an entire nation and upset the whole world order in order to impose their leftist agenda, what does it mean to them for a lone voice in the media? No more books, no more teachers' dirty looks. No more pencils, no more books, no more teachers' dirty looks. That's all there is to it. Now I'll take your calls on all of these topics and more. 1-800-449-8255. Super Bowl breaks all-time viewing record, draws 111 million intelligent people like you. I admit I watched it myself for a total of 10 seconds. I was searching the dial. I figured as an American I might be tested by the Department of Homeland Security as to whether I watched it and who scored what. So I had to see which gang beat which gang. I had to see. You know what I was wondering? I used to watch football when I was younger. I never saw people punching each other in the face, almost punching each other in the face, excuse me, using hands the way these guys use their hands on each other. And I said, when is it going to be legal for them to run down the field holding automatics, firing them at each other? I mean, because basically they're not that far away from it. Admittedly, they're better athletes than gangbangers. That's true. But it's not too far down the line when they'll be able to run down the field firing Glocks at each other, I figured, in the way they're behaving now. Where's the sportsmanship, I asked myself. But then again, I'm not one of the 111 million kielbasa eaters. 1-800-449-8255. New York, Tom, you've been holding a long time on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. May the God of the Ten Commandments...
Oh, please, stop with the God every time. Please, it sounds redundant and almost hacky, so please, let's go on.
Well, it's important to me, Michael. Billy
O... Wait, excuse me. It may be important to you, but it is a national radio show. It's not Breaker One. So please, let's not go on with your view of God on my show. There are people who don't have your view of God. You understand it marginalizes me?
Yeah, I wanted to say Billy O is a part-time conservative and a full-time Fox Babe watcher. He should have asked the president a direct question about the Muslim Brotherhood. He should have said, Mr. President, the Muslim Brotherhood assassinated Anwar Sadat. Do you consider the Muslim Brotherhood, who is attempting to overthrow Egypt, to be in the same category as Hamas and Hezbollah?
I agree 1,000%. The Muslim Brotherhood wants to not only retake the Middle East, they want to retake Rome. In fact, if you actually study who they are, they're the granddaddy of all terrorists, only now they're repositioning themselves as some moderate other voice in Egypt. But the bigger point to me, Tom, and forgive me for my loss of temper for my friends who listen to the show, the bigger point for me is that Obama putatively says he wants democracy to reign in the Middle East, and he wants a representative government to the will of the people. And I would have asked him, if I were Bill O'Reilly and fortunate enough to be granted an interview, Mr. President, you want representative government, you want the will of the people to reign, then how is it that in America, where the majority of people are opposed to Obamacare, the majority of people are opposed to the war in Afghanistan, the majority of people are opposed to your spending madness, how is it that you don't respect their will? Why is it that you don't incorporate the will of most of the people of America? But he didn't ask those questions. And that is worrisome, that's all. It's as simple as that. Okay, so you want to go on to talk about this further, we could do it. You could talk about Obama selling England down the drain and what that means for our national security, that the Obama administration betrays Britain to appease the Russians over the New START treaty. Most of you don't know anything about it because you're watching the gangs run down the field yesterday. New York, WOR, Joe, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Michael Savage, you are so courageous. It's too bad that Ronald...
No, I'm not courageous. I'm a fool. I'm a fool for taking on... so many powerful people like this by calling them out as I'm supposed to do. I feel like I'm absolutely becoming more and more isolated and more of a voice in the wilderness. I see this almost nowhere anymore. On the internet, and very, very rarely do you see this or hear this in the media. Everyone has been cowed by the communist regime in America.
Tremendous. Dr. Savage, you had no harm or would offer no harm or damage to England, and you were banned.
Right.
Obama has absolutely neutralized them.
Yes.
Has obliterated, has removed their defenses.
Right, right.
I know he's head of state.
Right,
fact,
right. Should he be banned from entering England? He's the most dangerous man. He committed more damage to Britain's national security than everyone on the terrorist list.
Absolutely. And what would he do to our country?
See, but it's all a matter of degree. It's been said years ago, if you steal a dollar, you go to jail. If you steal $10 million, you work for Smith Barney. I'm just choosing one company out of many. And if you can steal $100 million, you become a director of one of the departments of the United States government. See, it's all a matter of degree. If you steal a necklace, you go to jail. If you rob the entire jewelry chain of all of its profits by manipulating their loans, you go to work for the Treasury Department. You understand how that works?
Does England respond to this? Have they responded to it? Does it matter to them?
No. Well, did they respond? I don't know. What did Cameron have to say? They won't take me off the list of people banned, but I'm sure they'll give Obama the king's greetings when he arrives, even though he sold them down the river to the Russians.
Make him a knight. And,
yeah, make him a knight in shining armor, that's all. A knight in shining armor. No, it's sickening. It's disgusting. I got to tell you, again, I mean, I hate to keep repeating it, but people run into me. They say, oh, you mean you're still banned in England? Where did the lie come out that I was lifted from the ban? I'm still not allowed to go to England for the famous cuisine and to get my dental work done. I mean, I've been trying to get into England for 2 years to have my teeth fixed because they have such superb dental care. Just look at their teeth. But all kidding aside, I'm still banned in England. I'm having a tooth put in this Friday here for my dentist. Oh, I'm not looking forward to it. I told you what happened. Did you hear this story? You know, they put the titanium pin in your mouth, and they put a tooth, and then a couple of months later, it's like a regular tooth. It's a very good procedure. What happened was, 2 years ago on a December, I had one of these put in. And a few weeks later, I went to dinner with Mitt Romney, of all people. He had actually emailed me, and he asked for a sit-down with me alone. It was like O'Reilly and Obama, but it was in an Italian restaurant. It was in the North Beach restaurant, actually, in San Francisco. My friend Lorenzo owns the place. Great food. Really, we sat in the window, Mitt Romney and I thought we had a very good conversation. And when I do respect the man. I want to be very clear. And I would choose him over Obama, but he's a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican. You're going to get no action on illegal immigration and on many, many other important points, but you'll get more than you would out of, let us say, a guy like McCain, okay? So I had dinner with Romney. I came home. I was, remember, 2 weeks into this tooth implant, right? I was very, very agitated, excited over the meeting, and I tried to explain it to Mrs. S, and I didn't look, and I bit down on a piece of hard Italian bread, and bingo, I hear a snap, like you break a leg, a ping, and that was the end of that tooth. So then I had to go through the whole procedure, the cadaver bone. That was 4 months until it set in the head. I didn't know what worried me was. I kept jokingly saying to myself, I thought he put a piece of plastic bone in. It turns out, no, it was cadaver bone, which I didn't want. Because then you worry, who was the cadaver? Was it a drunk? Was it a junkie? Was it a communist bone? Would the DNA transfer? It's allegedly sterile bone, but I didn't know whether it had been a former worker for the, you know, you didn't own a. So thus far, I see no change in personality. So it's over a year later that the bone has been in my head, and now I could finally have a new pin put in. But it's the last shot. If I break another pin, I'm finished. So what's the challenge? The challenge is to not eat on the right side of my mouth for another 6 months. Okay, that's it. You know, time and gravity catches up with all of us. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A lot of people underestimate the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, it sounds like it's a fraternity in Vermont or something. It isn't. The Muslim Brotherhood is the wellspring of most of the radical Islamic terrorism that we've been facing today, from Hamas to Al-Qaeda. Two of Osama bin Laden's principal teachers Mohammed Qutb and Abdullah Azam came out of the Muslim Brotherhood. Ayman al-Zawahiri, his deputy, comes from the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. Therefore, you're dealing with an organization that has been committed to violence. And if you look at the statements of its leaders, they still are committed to violence and to the use of force against American troops in Afghanistan and Iraq.
And yet our president is in favor of a representative government in Egypt, which of course means the Muslim Brotherhood. They are now cited every time you see the opposition, you see the words Muslim Brotherhood. So anybody who's in favor of overthrowing Mubarak should think twice, as I did from day one, because I realized that as dictatorial as he is, well, do you want the devil you know or the devil you don't know? You know the old phrase? Apparently we know the phrase, but the administration doesn't, or do they? See, that's the real question. Do they know what they're doing here, or don't they know what they're doing here? Okay? New York, WOR, Randy, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Mr. Savage. I hope I'm not getting off the topic, but I was kind of wondering. Now, I'm not a big fan of Bill O'Reilly, but I was wondering if maybe you're being a little rough on him.
Well, I started by saying I hope it is not seen that way, but notice that three of the five most important points to the American people were not asked by Mr. O'Reilly.
I understand that, but don't you think that, or you would know, given an interview with the president, they pretty much went over what will and won't be discussed?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course the questions were established in advance. There's no question, but then why would Fox agree to such an interview when they can't ask questions that are of importance to their audience? Remember, their audience is supposedly a conservative or center-right or independent, yet every issue that's of importance to this audience, this core audience of Fox News, the national debt, the war in Afghanistan, illegal aliens, Obamacare, not one of those questions were asked by their big star, softball O'Reilly.
Yeah, that does seem strange.
So in other words, you could say I'm being harsh. I'm asking a question. I normally would never talk about an interview by another person in the media because I'm only giving him publicity. But I felt it was important enough because it set a new stage for us. For Obama to come over to Fox News is a big deal. But if he's only going to use Fox News as a vehicle to improve his popularity, I think I have an obligation as a true independent to talk about it.
That's true, and probably both O'Reilly and Fox looked at it as a, you know, they scored with getting the president.
That's correct. All that mattered was ratings. That's all that mattered. In other words, but the point I was making is once the truth starts to go, liberty is next. I know it sounds like an esoteric concept, but if you have no opposition party in America in the Republicans whatsoever. They're only a phantom of an opposition party. And so if we have no opposition from the Republicans and no opposition from the media, then we have a dictatorship, don't we?
Absolutely.
All right, so now you understand why I'm not being overly harsh. I'm just asking a question that any man who considers himself to be an independent would have to ask, or else how am I going to maintain my credibility with my audience? You see, look, I hope you're listening to me on this show. A lot of you listen every day religiously. I have one job, and that job is to ask questions that I think many of you would like asked, or to give you observations that you think, you know, if you thought about it long enough, you would come to yourself. You can't come to them yourself because you don't have the time. You're busy raising a family, making a buck, whatever. I have the other considerations as well, but I'm also paid to do something here, and I'm paid very well for it, by the way. As a man with the third largest radio audience in America, make no mistake about it, my radio audience is larger than that of Glenn Beck. And while Glenn Beck's ratings have fallen by 33% on television last year, my ratings have actually gone up on radio. So don't assume because you don't hear my name or see me anywhere that I'm not listened to. I'm an independent. I'm listened to and I have one job. With all respects for the president, see, and for the respects due the president, I still have an obligation to perform my job the best I can. And my job is to be an independent voice. The day I can't or won't do that is the day you're never going to hear from me again.
Savage.
There are those who say the Muslim Brotherhood is a problem for Israel. It's not just a problem for Israel. If you look at the literature, if you look at the ideology, if you look at the website of the Muslim Brotherhood, they talk about creating a new caliphate. They talk about spreading into Europe. It's a problem for Israel, but it's a problem for the West as well.
And if you look at the pictures coming out of Cairo now, it's gone from a million people to several thousand, and the several thousand who are left are the religious fanatics. It's the religious fanatics being put in the Tahrir Square by the Muslim Brotherhood. All the Twitterers are gone. No longer do you see the Western-educated dungaree dolls with the Blackberries twittering away. They're, I guess, back to work or trying to get some water into their apartments. All that are left are the fanatics. And so, therefore, if you're on the side of the fanatics, you have a right to be on the side of the fanatics until it comes home to roost. But let me give an example of where fanaticism leads. Here's a story just came out minutes ago. New York TV executive found guilty in wife's beheading. Was it a rabbi? No. Was it a priest who beheaded his wife? No. Was it a Buddhist priest who beheaded his wife? No. Was it a Hindu priest who beheaded his wife? No. After a three-week trial and 1 hour of deliberations, an upstate New York jury found Muzami Hassan guilty of second-degree murder for beheading his wife, not beating her. Now, we hear a lot about wife beating and evil white males, but this Muzami Hassan, was found guilty of second-degree murder for beheading his wife. I don't know what it would have taken to be guilty of first-degree murder, but in New York State, apparently you could behead your wife, and it's only second-degree murder. In February of 2009, Hassan, who founded a TV network aimed at countering Muslim stereotypes, went to a police station in the Buffalo, New York suburb of Orchard Park and told officers his wife was dead. Now, remember who he is. He created a TV network that was set up to be a propaganda to counter Muslim stereotypes. Turns out he decapitated his wife. Turned out that, according to the prosecutor during opening arguments, that the long knife used by her husband had left marks on his office's tile floor. Hassan gave his own closing arguments today. Earlier in the trial, he had dismissed his attorney, Jeremy Schwartz, who by trial's end was acting as his legal advisor. Schwartz said Hassan had felt that throughout the tenure of his marriage, no one had listened to his side. It was important for him in the 2 hours that he had for summation to get across his side and how he saw his marriage. In other words, it was a marital dispute. But I guess from his religious standpoint, if the wife doesn't agree, you just cut her head off. According to prosecutors, Asaya Hassan, the wife, had filed for divorce less than a week before she had her head cut off. On the day she died, the wife agreed to take some of her husband's clothes to his office after he had moved out of their home. He had told her he would not be there, but he was there. The defendant viciously killed and desecrated her body because 6 days earlier she had dared to file for divorce, dared to seek a better life for herself and the children, according to Assistant DA Paul Bonanno. The defense lawyer said in his opening statement that the couple's marriage was a sad and unhealthy relationship and that the wife threatened to embarrass his client and take away his children. It ended with Mo Hassan in fear of his own life, he told jurors. Mo Hassan killed his wife, but he's not guilty of murder in the second degree. He only cut her head off. During the trial, Michael and Sonia Hassan testified that their father had become violent in the past. While both said the couple argued, neither recalled a case in which Asaya, their stepmother, instigated a fight. Well, I don't have to go on. All you got to know is the whole story. He was the chief executive officer of the network Bridges TV, right? And he was set up to show how Muslims are really good and kind and wonderful, right? It was to get rid of negative portrayals of Muslims. And what he did was he cut his wife's head off because they had a bad fight. And his lawyer says, you don't know the real man. Don't judge him yet. He's not even guilty of second-degree murder. I don't know what it would have taken in New York State to get a first-degree murder charge, but cutting your wife's head off apparently is now only a second-degree murder charge, which means he could be out in 5 to 7. People get more time for stealing library books. 1-800-449-8255. Florida, Yaja, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, long-time listener, and I'm reading your book, Trickle of Poverty. You're the best.
Oh, good.
2 points real quick. Oh, I think Obama made a monkey out of O'Reilly, and I won't watch him anymore. And number two, I am on a political site called Yetta, and I've been on there for a long time, and they used to ask us questions. Then a few months ago, AOL started up asking lots of political questions. Now today on Yetta, they ask us what we think about Adriana Huffington controlling the content of our site since they bought out the Huffington.
Yeah, I'm going to cancel my AOL mail. After 15 years, I'm dropping AOL mail. I have nothing to do with that left-wing fanatic propagandist.
Well, I know that.
No, I'm switching to Yahoo Mail. I'm dropping my AOL Mail because I will not enrich that gold digger.
Right. Well, you know, Prince Alawid, and I know you know this, has 2.1 billion in CNS parent AOL. And so what they did was, at least this is my take on it, what's yours? They bought out Huffington, put her in charge of a mostly conservative site. They crawled under the fence, just like Pelosi wanted to do, and they're not waiting for any net neutrality. I mean, that's the way
I see
it.
Well, the same way News Corp is owned 19% by a Saudi prince, isn't he?
I really don't know that answer.
Oh, you didn't know that 19% of News Corp is owned by a Saudi prince? Does that explain a little bit about their so-called neutrality?
It certainly does.
Oh, I thought everyone knew that. I thought it was common knowledge that 20%, 19%, the last I checked, was owned by a Saudi prince. There was a time when foreigners could not own a media in the government. But, those rules went out the window with Bill Clinton.
Well, a lot went out the window with Bill Clinton. But, and Alawid, he also has, and that was in a Time magazine article, but the man has 16 billion in companies in this country. And I know you know that. And
what do you think about Hassan, who founded a TV network aimed at countering Muslim stereotypes? He beheads his wife because she dared ask for a divorce. Do you think that he countered Muslim stereotypes with his act of cutting her head off?
Well, from what I have read in the Hadith and the Sunnah and the Quran, that's the...
Oh, you shouldn't say that, because according to the Department of Homeland Security, there is there's not even a war on terror. It's a war against extremism.
That's right. It's amazing.
That's right.
It's
against extremism. We have no enemies. The boys dying in Afghanistan are not fighting radical Muslims. They're fighting extremists, very much like our own homegrown terrorists. Thank you for the call. I think you only want to talk about O'Reilly. I keep seeing the calls on that. That's all I keep. Ahmed in Sacramento, thank you for listening. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Go ahead, hello? Please. Make your point.
Yeah, my point is I was born and raised in Egypt, and I'm here about 12 years ago. And I just want to say that the Brotherhood, if they come and the president chair, is going to be so bad for everybody. And this does not mean that all the Egyptian people are a brotherhood.
Well, I know that's why Mubarak was your best friend, because he suppressed the Muslim Brotherhood. But if you throw him out, don't you think they're going to take a lot of power in Egypt?
They're not going to take any power, because I think the Egyptian people, you know what? I'm just going to tell you a small story right now. I called a cousin of mine in Egypt right now.
Right.
And she's a very religious person, covered from the head to toe. And
yes.
I was asking her, Bunyan, about, you know, what's going on in the country and what she think. She said, we cannot make him leave, because if he leave, the Brotherhood will be occupying the country and we're going to be so bad in this country.
Oh, so even a religiously extremist cousin doesn't want the Brotherhood?
She doesn't want the Brotherhood, and she's a religion. She's a Muslim woman. She's a.
That's very interesting. I wouldn't have understood that, truthfully. As an American outsider, I would have not understood that. I wouldn't have expected that. Let me put it to you that way. I would have thought that any woman who would want to walk around in a medieval costume like that would want the Muslim Brotherhood. Why would she be opposed to them?
My cousin, she's a cover from the head to toe, and she's a religious person, but she never she thinking that way, that the Brotherhood can be, you know. It's we love people, my friend. We love life, and we are.
That's beautiful. No, I love to hear this. It's a beautiful call. But what I'm afraid of is what happened in Lebanon with Hezbollah. We called for free elections. We got Hezbollah. We called for free elections, and we got the fanatics in Gaza. You know, so wherever we call for democracy, we don't get democracy. And if Obama hasn't learned that, then either he's out of touch with reality or something worse. I don't understand it. Wherever we've asked for democracy, we haven't gotten democracy. Sometimes democracy doesn't work. Sometimes the most fanatic win. You know, in other words, democracy comes out of the barrel of a gun to many of these people. New York, WOR, Bill, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, O'Reilly used to be more conservative, but he moved to the left since Glenn Beck came on board.
So they let Glenn Beck take his place?
Pardon me?
They let Glenn Beck fill that niche?
That's what I think. So now they Fox appeals to a wider wider audience, and it's all about ratings, as you said.
Well, that's important for all of us in the business. I mean, you don't want to walk down the end of a a diving board where there's no one left listening to you but the 300 people, you know, by becoming a strident maniac. But on the other hand, how far can you go in spreading yourself too thin with your opinions?
O'Reilly also, he moderated his views on amnesty for illegal aliens. He used to be dead set against any kind of amnesty for illegal aliens, but later on he switched to, he's only opposed to amnesty for illegal aliens who have committed some kind of a criminal act. So he's kind of partial.
Well, he should widen his knowledge of what a crime means to the fact that when you come across the border illegally, you've committed a criminal act. It's a felony. It's a felony. If you're here illegally, it's actually a felony. It's just that we have an illegitimate government and have had one for three governments in a row that won't enforce the fact that it's a felony to break into the country. What's the point of having a border? What's the point of having immigration laws if people can break them with impunity?
That's all right. Another thing he did was he's a real phony. He said years ago, and I heard him say it, if he were an illegal alien, he'd sneak into this country too in order to feed his family. He doesn't believe in the rule of law.
Well, that's an interesting point, but that's not the point. The point is what we do in the as a sovereign nation to protect the sovereignty of our nation. And if we're not willing to defend our borders, our language, and our culture, we're going to disappear as a country, which is exactly what's been happening over the last 15 years. One administration after another has hammered us so hard on our borders, language, and culture that we're almost unidentifiable as a nation.
I mean,
Bill, that's been my watchword since 1994. People ask me in the beginning, you know, you're coming into radio rather later on in life. I was 50 years old when I started in radio. I'd had three, four other careers prior to radio. And they said to me, well, who are you? What do you stand for? I said, well, my motto is borders, language, and culture, and that I'm a conservative. I'm a moderate. I'm actually a very strong conservative, but I have a very strong firewall when it comes to racism. Racism has no place alongside nationalism. And the fact is I've tried to toe that line for 16 straight years. I believe you can still love your country, you can support your country, you can believe in strong borders, the language English in the workplace and in all principal places of business, and our culture, which was built on Judeo-Christian values, which are still the greatest values the world has ever seen. You can believe in borders, language, and culture, and you can still be a great American. In fact, I don't know how you can be an American without believing in your borders, language, and culture, and I still believe it. I started with that credo, and I haven't altered it one iota, Bill. Not one iota. Does that make me wrong? Am I painting myself into a corner? I don't think so.
Oh.
No, not at all. You know, and what proof do I have? Okay, again, I don't want to get too self-indulgent here. You could say, well, he's just blowing, you know, wind in the air, and he's making it up as he goes along. I'm telling you, first of all, my ratings have gotten larger from year to year than smaller. That's number one. Number two, without any promotion whatsoever, without a television show, without any TV appearances, without any press to speak of, the show is the third largest radio show in America. And remember, it starts late in the day. It's on a syndicator who's independent, and I'm not on the biggest stations in every city. And despite all of this, and despite the fact that I was not on in the radio in a couple of cities when my book came out, which really bothered me at the time, my book became a New York Times bestseller. It became a Wall Street Journal bestseller. It was on many bestseller lists for quite a period ever. So what does that mean? It means that we want to be heard. It means that we are part of this government. It means we vote. It means we want to be heard, and we're not being heard by the Republican Party and certainly not the Democrats. So when it comes to the media, I think that people have an obligation to pay very close attention to who is saying what. It doesn't mean O'Reilly's a bad man. It means that he has a desire to make more money. But what he doesn't understand is, and that's why I read the Getty thing, that money can't buy you love, and also power and fame cannot buy you honor. And I'm saying that you can throw your honor away with one interview, and I'll be right back. Oh, you know, look, you got Egypt, it's calming down, and the only people, if you look at the pictures coming out of Tahrir Square, they look like the most fanatic of the people, the tight dungaree crowd. All the dungaree dolls either went back to work or flew back to Berkeley or New York, wherever they came from. You know what was on my mind over the last 2 weeks? Where'd the money come from for this revolt? They made it look like it was, you know, nothing spontaneous. If you go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and spend 10 minutes reading my 13-page article, just skim it. you'll see that Soros was behind it, likely behind it, okay, in my opinion. Soros and a certain group of people who are going to profit from it were behind it. That's number one. Every revolt requires organization and money. If you study revolutionary movements, it doesn't matter whether they're left-wing revolutions or right-wing revolutions. They all require organization and money and timing. Who put up the money for this revolt? And where did all of the dungaree dolls go all of a sudden? They went with the Twitter mob is all back in the U.S., including the Google guy there. Did you see that Google was involved in the riots in Egypt? What does that tell you about Google and where they're coming from? The whole left wing seems to be behind wanting to overthrow Mubarak. So you say, well, why? What do they got to gain by overthrowing a dictator? Oh, they're going to have democracy? It's not necessarily true that democracy will arise from the ashes of Mubarak's demise. It's highly likely that it won't. In fact, wherever we have meddled in the Middle East, anything but democracy has arisen. So again, the old adage, it's better to do business with the devil you know than the devil you don't know. But apparently this country is either ruled by children who don't know history, or there are other reasons that they are doing this that have to do with profit. And I'm not privy to the profit that's been made or will be made, but I'm sure some people went long or short on oil, or went long on oil first and then shorted it, because you notice oil dropped today. They probably longed it in the beginning. During the steam of the revolution, oil went up over $100 a barrel. And now oil dropped down because the trillionaires who manipulate the markets took their profits and walked away. Just look at the balance sheets at the end of 2011 and get back to me when you'll already forget the Egypt riots. And take a look at a few of the funds and see how the hedge funds did and where they made their money. You'll figure out who made money on the riots in Egypt and Tunisia, etc. You'll see where it all came from. It's always got to do with money. So that's one thing. Then there's always something else, and on and on and on and on and on. You know, there's so many things you can talk about on a radio show from day to day. You can talk about politics, which I do ad infinitum. I can also talk about the economy and money, which is related to politics. So on Mondays, I usually like to talk about entertainment, restaurants, food, which I did. I talked about food. We talked about the junk food menu served by the White House while lecturing you to eat carrot sticks. Tuesday is an open day. Wednesday, economy and money. Thursday, nutrition and health. Friday, I like to do religion and philosophy. And that was the pattern that I was following before the end of last year. I'll try to get back to it. So tomorrow is an open day. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. Truthfully, God willing, I'll be here. And we'll be here. We'll talk about other things. Right now, I have a little time. One last call. Quick, Pittsburgh, you're on the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm calling you about your dental implants.
Yes.
I lived in Japan for 15 years back in the Way day. The Japanese were leaders in dental implant, and that's why I'm a big fan of them. I happen to have four. The youngest one is 15 years old. When your surgeon talked to you, did he offer you a pig bone graft?
No. In fact, I specifically said I wanted plastic. I did not want a human cadaver bone, but that's what I got. But thus far, I have not been transformed into a communist or into anything else from the DNA of the human bone, because I suspect it was sterilized.
That the typical hog ground-up skull bone will graft with human bone. I have implants, Dr.
So in other words, if you use a pig bone implant, it's considered very good because it's compatible with human DNA. That's very nice. So all your life you could avoid pork, and then you could put in an implant and wind up walking around with Porky Pig in your head.
My head. Pig bone.
Do you feel any different because you have pig bone in your head? Has anything changed? Do you have a craving for slop? Do you like to roll in the mud?
But my implant happened.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. Well, let's start today by talking about let them eat carrot sticks. The First Lady, Michelle Obama, as elegant as she is, tells us to eat carrot sticks and eat health foods, and that's a good message. And then she serves junk food at the White House. What was the menu for the guests at the White House Super Bowl party? Well, it wasn't carrot sticks. It was bratwurst, kielbasa, cheeseburgers, deep dish pizza, and buffalo wings with a nice side of German potato salad, trice-baked potatoes, and assorted chips and dips. How's that for eating healthy at the White House? Before the Super Bowl this weekend, Bill O'Reilly of Fox News interviewed President Obama. Well, it was a series of softball questions custom-made to make Obama look great. The leprechaun, true to his green color, didn't say a word about illegal immigration, didn't ask a question about Obama's betrayal of the UK's nuclear secrets, didn't say one word about the majority of the people wanting us out of Afghanistan. Instead, the leprechaun asked President Obama what surprised him the most about the job of being president, if it annoys him that some people hate him, and if he planned to watch the Super Bowl. What's interesting to me is Obama has said that he wants to respect the will of the Egyptian people with respect to their choice of ruler. In other words, he wants popular opinion to reign in Egypt. And yet O'Reilly didn't ask what Obama didn't ask why Obama refuses to respect the will of the American people. The majority of American people, you see, have rejected Obamacare. They've rejected the war in Afghanistan. They've rejected the czars. They've rejected his high taxation. They've rejected the illegal immigrants coming across the border. And yet Obama doesn't seem to respect the will of the people here, but he's interested in the will of the people in Egypt? O'Reilly served up easy questions and challenged Mr. Obama on nothing. I believe the leprechaun made himself look pretty weak. But I'll ask you, do you think Bill the Leprechaun O'Reilly ruined his career with this interview? Do you think he strengthened or weakened his credibility? Do you think that O'Reilly has become the Helen Thomas of our day? Do you think O'Reilly will take Helen Thomas's seat up front? What didn't O'Reilly ask that he should have asked? Is there any much of a difference between Bill O'Reilly and Barry Obama and John McCain? Will Obama soon invite prominent so-called conservatives to the White House? Who do you think will be there? None dare call it treason is another big topic today. You don't know about it because it happened on Friday. I'm the only one who reported on it in the media. Did you know what Obama did? He has agreed to give away the UK's nuclear secrets to Russia in exchange for a nuclear treaty that Russia can opt out of at any time. What do you think the Republican Congress will do about it? Duh. Why do you think WikiLeaks revealed this information now? Well, what exactly is it that Obama did? Without burdening you, he gave away the code numbers to the Trident missiles that we supplied to the United Kingdom. This is despite the fact that the UK did not want these code numbers shared with Moscow. They wanted them kept secret. Now, I want to ask you a question. If a soldier who was guarding the codes to these missiles, or even the code numbers of the Trident missiles, was found to have transferred these code numbers to Russia in surreptitious a fashion, let us say for money, that soldier would be tried for treason. Is that correct? And yet the president does it and no one says a word? I'm sorry. I respect the presidency. I actually respect Obama. He is the president. I recognize how much power they have and how little power I have, which is nil. And I recognize how dangerous it is to criticize it in a dictatorship. But I have to ask the question, how come Obama did this? How can he betray Britain to appease the Russians over the New START treaty? And how is it that almost nobody in the media has asked them about that? These are important questions that I respectfully submit to the president and the American media. Okay, now let's go to all the news stories that I've garnered for the day and put up on michaelsavage.com, Borders, Language, and Culture. Top left, how President Obama plays media like a fiddle. Top right, the Egyptian revolution will continue until our demands are met. Who is our Muslim Brotherhood? UK's Cameron. Europe must wake up to Islamic threat from within. Ho-hum. Concerns grow over Egypt's WMD research. Really? I thought they only wanted freedom. Islamists holding Egypt hostage extract concessions from the government. Gee, I thought it was a popular uprising. Farm insurance fraud scams bilk taxpayers for millions. Ah, business as usual. Don't be silly. Obama and the shadow socialist group behind Egypt's fall. Read my essay. It's 13 pages long. How about this one on Michael Savage? Did you see the picture of the white mummy? The white mummy? What white mummy? The white mummy pulled by the Chinese dictatorship. Did you hear about that? She's 4,000 years old. She was found in Western China. The Chinese pulled it from an exhibition because it may prove that Europeans or Caucasians were in China long before they claim we were. Wave of immigrants from India cross illegally over the Rio Grande. No kidding. You're kidding. Some come here to work. Afghan Red Cross workers set to be hanged after converting to Christianity. Did you know who died over the weekend? John Paul Getty III, destroyed by his family's billions. More on the cop scams around the country. Nassau County, New York City, retiring cops pocketed nearly $16 million by cashing in their unused sick days on top of other incentives. The pension nightmare is blowing up in our faces. Michelle Obama, again, throws her weight behind campaign for smaller portions for children at restaurants while serving deep dish pizza, cheeseburgers, bratwurst, kielbasa, and buffalo wings, sides of yunky German potato salad, twice-baked potatoes with cream, assorted chips and dips, and beer for Super Bowl Sunday. No carrot sticks permitted. All of this and more, including pictures of the kielbasa, on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
Wake up and you find out that the Obama administration gave away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia. They stabbed an ally in the back. We find out definitively that Obama stabbed Mubarak in the back. Remember, it took a long time to create the relationship with Mubarak and to create the stability in the Middle East that we have. As tenuous as it is, its stability, or it was, until this meddling communist in the White House took control of this country and has done everything he can, as fast as he can, to run this country off the rails and turn it into a third-rate nation. And, you know, I want to say something. We've been talking about the hearings on the Nadal Hassan case, the Fort Hood massacre, where for years before he went off with the gun, for years before the Muslim major screamed Allah Akbar and killed 13 and wounded 32, for years before he did it, he was saying, I don't believe in the U.S. Constitution. I believe in the Quran. I'm communicating with open terrorists. The FBI was afraid to do anything. The army did nothing. Why? Well, they said he was a ticking time bomb, and Lieberman said that he was a ticking time bomb. Listen to clip 7, what Lieberman said.
Hassan's words made him not just a ticking time bomb, but a traitor. We must take
right there. Am I going too far to say that Obama's actions show him to be a ticking time bomb? I'm telling you, I don't know what to say anymore. Each day astonishes me what he gets away with, not what he does. I am not surprised by what Obama does. Obama is the destroyer, as I pointed out, in trickle-up poverty. He has taken a fine nation. He's taken it apart like a fine watch. It'll never be put back together again. Each day he takes another spring out of the watch that was carefully crafted, carefully assembled, put into this watch called America. Each day he takes the watch apart with his dim-witted friends, these college communists, who have never created a job in their lives. He is destroying the greatest country on earth. He is not loyal to Egypt? Of course not. He engineered it with Brzezinski because Soros wanted this done, to the best of my knowledge. I wrote a 13-page essay on it. It's on michaelsavage.com. I assembled what I think is the proof that Obama is behind the fall of Egypt and Tunisia and, God forbid, next Jordan. He absolutely engineered this. Did he think that it would cause Egypt to go over in flames? I don't think so. I think that the man is such a fool and such a deluded communist opportunist that he actually thought he could cause Mubarak to step aside in a parliamentary democracy to arise in an area that never heard of John Locke, doesn't know who Thomas Jefferson is, has no idea what democracy is. He thought somehow in his idealistic mind he could have some kind of putative, watered-down democracy in Egypt and the Middle East, and then eventually they could force the Israelis to give up half of Israel, and he could win a Nobel Prize from the communists in Sweden. It came out, by the way, this didn't come out by itself. They didn't tell us this. These are the WikiLeaks cables. U.S. agrees to tell Russia Britain's nuclear secrets, stabs England in the back, stabs Egypt in the back, stabs Israel in the back. The man has no loyalty to anything except his agenda. His agenda. His agenda. So I'm going to ask you a question. Are you, as a liberal, proud of your president? Are you proud of this man that you put in the White House, that he would stab our British partners in the back like this in order to appease Russia? Obama stabbed Britain in the back. He gave away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia. So a caller calls and says, I'm paranoid because I said that, and that my show is built upon paranoia. He repeated it 10 times because it's a big word that makes him sound powerful. I asked him to define the word paranoia, the concept of what paranoia means. He didn't really know it. He kept going around it. But then he said something very telling. He said that paranoia is what defines my show, but he couldn't define it himself. And I asked him over and over again, define the word paranoia. Well, he couldn't define it over and over again. But I'm going to read you a definition, and I'm going to ask you whether it more clearly defines him or me. Paranoia often brings a person to the point of irrationality and delusion. Is it delusional of me to call Obama a traitor? Or is it delusional of him to cover up a traitorous president? Is it delusional of him to not comprehend that we're living through something we've never lived in this country before, which is a man in the White House who actually hates the country? We have a quisling Republican Party that would have done nothing to stop it, so it really wouldn't have mattered. Fundamentally, we have a Democrat or Republican government. It's an oligarchy. The parties are just mere front groups for the oligarchy. And so once the oligarchy decided they wanted the Star Treaty, it didn't matter which of the puppets in either of the parties said what. It would have happened anyway. So I read this. I'm shocked. I call the president a traitor. I say he committed treason. I ask for hearings. And one of his workers in Chicago, or one of his campaign workers, or someone who works for him in some other capacity, no doubt, calls up and starts calling me paranoid. And I ask him to define the word paranoia. And he keeps repeating the word paranoia, paranoia, you're paranoid. People listen to you are paranoid. You live on paranoia. So I said, Ronnie, define paranoia. He won't do it. So I said, Ronnie, this is my show, not yours. And listen to what he says. He says to me, now listen, he says, when I call your show, it's my show. And I want to tell you something. That is a clear sign of paranoid thinking. That's called delusion. Ronnie was actually projecting his own paranoia by declaring the reality of what I was saying was delusional. He was delusional in thinking that when he called the radio show, it was his radio show. And so, therefore, we're living in very dangerous times when workers for a government like Ronnie will call anybody who calls them out for what they are by medical terminology, because this went on in the Soviet Union. What happens next is Obama puts together a panel and declares that anyone in the media who criticizes him in any manner that's not acceptable to him and his left-wing psychiatric minions is mentally deranged, such as paranoid, and they need treatment. They're immediately arrested and put into a gulag where they're given treatment by the U.S. government psychiatrist, the same type that Nidal Hassan was. Remember, Nidal Hassan was a U.S. government psychiatrist. For 2 years, Nidal Hassan was screaming, Allah Akbar. He was writing, Allah is great, on medical reports in the army. He was communicating with a known terrorist. The army passed the buck. The FBI wouldn't arrest him. Nobody did anything for fear of being called committing some kind of prejudice. Consequently, he goes off and puts on the white robes and shoots, kills 13 and wounds 32 people. And then the defense secretary says that he won't even talk about the fact that it was a terrorist act. It was the single largest terrorist act since 9/11. Yet no one has gone to jail for having let Nidal Hassan be a ticking time bomb. I then made a comparison afterwards, and I said, wait a minute. If I look at what Obama's done since he came to office, he took out Winston Churchill's bust. He didn't exactly yet put in a portrait or a bust of Karl Marx or Lenin, but he may as well have done so because he's practicing their preachings in modern form, according to my analysis. I'm telling you that Obama's a ticking time bomb. Every day that goes by, we see the damage the man is doing. He's destroying this country. He is destroying everything that is good about the country. He has done nothing that is positive for the country. But what good is it if we don't have a fifth, if we don't have a press, when the fourth estate becomes the fifth column, as I've said over and over again, but that requires some historical knowledge. When the fourth estate has become the fifth column, and when the opposition party, meaning the Republicans, are really one and the same with the Democrats, tell me what's left in the country. Well, you have a few websites that'll report the truth. You have some talk shows that report the truth. But what power do we really have? Now, it is true we had some impact. 100 communists got thrown out in the last election. How many of them will turn out to be replaced by anything other than replacement? Half communists is another story. Many of you celebrated when Scott Brown of Massachusetts, a Republican so-called, took over Kennedy's seat. You were screaming he was the great white hope. Hey, Scott Brown was going to be the next president. Many of you jumped for joy. All you dittos, all you ditto heads. Hey, Scott Brown, next hero. I thought about it for 2 days, and I said, wait a minute, he's been in the assembly there, or the state of Massachusetts, for about 13 years. I said, he's just another, you know, politician from Massachusetts. He can't be really anyone you can rely upon. I watched another Showtime program, Brotherhood, long enough to know that it's all horse trading. They have no faith, no belief in a country. Most of them don't care about anything but staying in power and doing deals, that's all. Sure enough, who was right, me? I was paranoid in thinking that about Scott Brown, or was I correct?
Savage.
Look, we know about the federal judge in Florida who has ruled that Obamacare is just what we've said it is, unconstitutional, dictatorial, autocratic, whatever you want to say. And joining us now to talk about this is columnist Jack Hunter.
Good to be with you, Michael. Well, of course, we all know by now about the situation down there in Florida, where a federal judge has done something that the liberals just can't believe. He has declared that government-run health care, often known as Obamacare, is, get this, unconstitutional. Now, you or I or any conservative constitutionalist out there would have known from the get-go that this was unconstitutional. In fact, a reporter brought it up to Nancy Pelosi right after Obamacare was passed, said the reporter to Ms. Pelosi, what in the Constitution gives Congress the power to mandate to force citizens to purchase health care? Well, Pelosi's response was, are you serious? The reporter asked again, and she sort of ignored his question. But it is a pertinent question. What gives, in the Constitution, the federal government the power to implement this Obamacare legislation? Liberals think that their power is unlimited. Well, a federal judge said the opposite, and you're just seeing them go crazy, as we many of us expected them to.
Well, of course.
It's interesting that the liberals' reaction is that this judge, this federal judge, Roger Vinson, down there in Florida, is being an activist judge. Now, many conservatives, you and I included, have often complained about activist judges, but it shows you just how screwed up liberals are in the head, quite frankly, when it comes to the definition of what it means to be an activist judge. Think about this for a second. The role of a federal judge is to interpret the Constitution and make decisions accordingly. If a judge happens to make a ruling that's based on his own ideology, political sympathies, or for any other reason that is outside or in violation of the written text of the Constitution, then he is an activist judge. That is the proper definition. Yet, if a judge is going to determine whether Congress or the president has stepped outside of their constitutional bounds, as they have with Obamacare, then they're doing exactly what federal judges are supposed to do. They're supposed to interpret the Constitution and rule accordingly. That so many on the left can't figure out the difference shows you how they think and is further indicative of their notion of what the federal government should be allowed to do, which is basically have unlimited power toward goals that the left deems reasonable, acceptable, and worth pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the judge's ruling down there in Florida, the federal judge who has declared Obamacare unconstitutional, and rightfully so, and people not just on the right are sort of heralding this decision as, you know, an example of constitutional sanity for a change from our federal courts. But part of the reason for his ruling, he basically said that if Congress has the power, for instance, to mandate national health care, then their power is virtually unlimited, and that cannot stand. The entire reason we have a constitution is to limit government, to designate specific and enumerated powers, to delegate that power through the different branches of government, and to limit what those branches can do. They can't do anything outside of Article 1, Section 8, that gives Congress the power to do specific and enumerated things. The idea, according to liberals, that Obamacare, the idea that you can mandate health care, have government-run health care, mandate insurance, and all the rest, is in Article 1, Section 8, is beyond absurd. That a federal judge would call them on this has got a reaction out of them that is equally absurd.
It's insane.
And it shows you that, you know, if we don't have a limiting of government via our Constitution, then we really don't have any limiting period. There is no government to speak of. A government can be whatever it wants to be. In other words, we elect officials. We are a representative republic. We elect congressmen. We elect senators. We elect presidents. And we do that so they do their constituents' bidding. What rules do they follow? Will they take an oath to the Constitution? If that document means nothing, as many of the liberals out there are sort of saying with this judgment with the Obamacare ruling, then we are all susceptible to their whims. And that is a very scary thing to think about indeed.
Oh, I agree.
The very notion that you're an activist judge for doing what a federal judge is supposed to do, which is interpret the Constitution rule accordingly, is ridiculous on the face of it. It is indicative of how the left thinks. You know, it's worth noting that the Constitution is, for Americans, what the royal family is. The British look at the royal family as an extension, a continuation of tradition and order. But we all know that the royal family in its modern form really doesn't have any power whatsoever. Well, the Constitution, as proved by the liberals' reaction to this ruling on Obamacare, is very similar. Over the years, we have stripped so much power away from the Constitution by giving unlimited power to the federal government that it has lost its substantive meaning to a large degree. We see things where the federal government can do everything from implement regulations through the EPA about how many legs should be on a chair or what kind of how your toilet should flush or what sort of water pressure you should have in your shower, things that may use a commerce clause and all these different things that were never intended by the founding fathers, giving them virtually unlimited power. This latest defense with Obamacare has got Americans up in arms across the board, across the political spectrum. Many people who voted for Barack Obama are frightened by Obamacare.
Why?
They don't like the idea, oh, I don't know, of a 3.8% sales tax hidden in this legislation. They don't like the idea that there's going to be hidden taxes on tanning salons and on all sorts of other sin taxes that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Obama think needs to be taken care of in the name of health care. They don't like the idea that this legislation is going to make the IRS an agency that's going to make sure that you or I and American citizens across the board have to have health insurance. Obamacare does nothing to hire any new doctors, but it does plenty to hire an army of IRS agents that are going to keep tabs on us.
Exactly.
So Americans are worried about Obamacare, and they're worried to the extent that our government is not supposed to have that kind of power. Thankfully, in their infinite wisdom, the founding fathers set up our Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, specifically saying what our federal government could do, and to the extent that our federal government steps outside of that, it is precisely the role of federal judges to call them on it. That's the reason we have a Supreme Court and federal district courts. And that's exactly what happened in the situation with the judge down there in Florida. The system worked as George Washington and Thomas Jefferson would have wanted it to. And the idea that that guy is being an activist judge and doing precisely what the founders intended for a federal judge to do is completely ridiculous in so many ways it's not even worth speculating upon.
Exactly.
I think it's worth taking into account the hysterics by the left in reaction to this ruling as well. You know, part of liberal identity is sort of the post-New Deal state we have here in America. Of course, the entitlements in the form of Social Security and Medicare. And anything the federal government's really done since then, I don't care if it's sort of the welfare state being that was enacted by Lyndon Johnson, the Great Society and all that, even the extension of Medicare under George W. Bush, all that sort of state building, if you will, increased statism, that's part of liberal identity. Well, the Democrats have had on their docket for a long time to have this government-run health care system, as we see in Obamacare. In fact, some on the far left even think it doesn't go far enough, that it needs to be even more socialistic than it already is. So when this federal judge declared it unconstitutional, that put a real wrench in the works for what the liberals had on their agenda for this country.
Why do you say that?
It's not just Barack Obama. For a long time, we remember with Hillary Care back in the Bill Clinton era, they wanted to push national health care. This is integral to what they think is good for America and to their socialist little hearts, quite frankly. The idea that now, all of a sudden, because you could go back to FDR and the New Deal, and a lot of that was unconstitutional as well, but the idea that all of a sudden we've reached a point where they have been called on it. Hey, guys, hey, left, you can't go this far this time. This is a bridge too far. Not only that, but a lot of Americans agree with this judge down there aren't as scared of Obamacare as they should be. They are frightened of what's in this bill. And liberals can only go so far. And guess what? On top of it, it's not just about whether it's good or bad for America. It's about the rule of law. The rule of law in this country is our Constitution. That's the way the Founding Fathers intended it, and that a federal judge has recognized it has not only made them angry, but is going to save us a lot of grief and heartache by hopefully this thing not getting rammed down our throats.
All right.
It's interesting the actual language that Federal Judge Roger Vinson down there in Florida used, and this is what he said in his ruling, quote, "Never before has Congress required that everyone buy a product from a private company, essentially for life, just for being alive and residing in the United States. If it has the power to compel an otherwise passive individual into a transaction, it is not hyperbolic to suggest that Congress could do almost anything it wanted," end quote.
Hmm.
And Judge Vinson is absolutely correct in saying that. If we let the Democrats get away with pushing this Obamacare legislation, or law rather now, down our throats when we don't want it, and better yet, is unconstitutional, it really is saying, finally, not we haven't set it up to this point, that Congress can do absolutely anything it wants. So can the executive branch, and so can the courts for that matter. It was supposed to be a system of checks and balances, the different branches of government keeping checks on each other, with federal judges deciding what's constitutional or unconstitutional. That's the way the system works. That's the way the system worked this time. To allow Obamacare to stand as is to give an official declaration the federal government of the United States is virtually unlimited. I don't know about you, but that's one of the scariest propositions I could possibly imagine.
I see what you mean. Thanks for the report, Jack.
But for this and more, I encourage your listeners to visit SouthernAvenger.com. And as always, Mike, take care.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Everything turn.
It's unbelievable. I got chills up and down my spine from this. Go ahead, mock God. A time to break down.
A time to dance. A time to mourn.
Time to dance. A time to mourn. Play stones. To gather stones together. Ecclesiastes 2. Actually, it's Ecclesiastes 3. To everything there is a time. Yes, there is a time to laugh, but there's also a time to not laugh. A time to dance, for sure, but a time not to dance. Yes, there's a time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. Go tell that to the bisexual slutting, and having your 12-year-old daughter dressing up like a harlot is something that is wonderful in America. Go tell that to the boys from Brazil who are now residing in Los Angeles, who pump pollution into the minds of your children day and night, the sewer pipe from Hollywood into every child's brain in this country. Go tell that to the golden idols of Los Angeles, where Obama is now bowing down to the golden rings. Some president, eh? Some president flying down to Los Angeles for money. Time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Read your Bible. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also, I say, that is from the hand of God. So there, I've given you your Bible. We are a group here on the Savage Nation that is diverse in its thinking. I understand that, and its composition. How do I know who's listening to the show? You go to a stadium, there's 45,000 people, and God knows 20,000 outside
clamoring to get in. You see every range of human being virtually, well, except those who are, you know, bedridden. I'm saying quite a range of humanity, from the high to the low, from the good to the evil. And you can't even tell them, really, from one to the other. And then you come back to a radio studio, and you're basically in a laboratory again. I may as well be in a greenhouse. I may as well be back in my days as a botanist, working in a greenhouse, growing rare exotic tropical plants, watching my little plants grow, from the plants that snap dragonflies in their petals to plants that are camouflaged, you don't even know what they are, to humble plants, to aggressive plants. I mean, there's a lot of things going on inside the world of plants. They may not speak, but believe me, they speak quite loudly. They've been around before we were, and they'll be around long after we're gone. As you know, if you've studied the gutters of New York, as I have, you'll see that there are street weeds that grow up in every crack. How is it that a plant can grow up out of a crack in a slummy street? How is it that if you throw garbage in the backyard of a slum in New York behind an apartment building, you'll still find plants coming up under the garbage? Well, go to the Buddhism for that answer. Read your Buddhist tractates. Out of the muck, a flower grows. Have you ever seen the beautiful flower that grows out of the muck of a swamp? Gorgeous. How is that possible? Because it's actually a metaphor for our lives. In some ways, some of us live in a swamp, and we want to get out of it. But even in the swampiest creature on earth, somewhere within that swampy creature, there's got to be a flower. Somewhere. I hate to sound so, you know, Dr. Seuss here. And so Libby, but what am I going to tell you? It's true. Somewhere within all of us, there is a flower waiting to emerge from the muck. And what we have to do as a gardener is find the flower within ourselves. And that's as preachy as I'm going to get today. I got to go back to my normal, you know, show, because I go down this road here, and what happens is some people get turned off. They figure I'm too preachy. Then other people like it because they say I love it, because we don't get it from anywhere. We thirst for the Bible as interpreted through your mind, because you filter it through everyday occurrences and through the news of the day. I understand all of that. I understand all of that. And sometimes I've been very tempted to do a show on the weekend for an hour, you know, a Bible show or a religion show, you know, the all-face thing. I don't know. I don't have unlimited time on earth, number one. You know, I got to start building my burial mound, my pyramid somewhere. I'm not an ancient pharaoh, but everyone has to think about those days, don't they? What am I going to do with all of my papers, all my writings, all my manuscripts, all my collections? Where are they going to go, all my hopes and dreams that no one's ever seen? Should they just be thrown in a garbage can? That's what I should do. Take all of these all these decades of writing, reading, searching, whether it be from the early days of just being a writer to a botanist to an anthropologist to a talk show host. Should I throw it all in a garbage can? I'm not going to do it. I have to create a little museum, the centerpiece of which will be the 1965 Caddy convertible that I actually thought of auctioning off to get rid of it because I don't need it. But then I said, wait a minute, save it for the museum, put it as a centerpiece to the Savage Museum somewhere. So my mind is like on this other stuff. At the same time, I got one eye on the ground, I got one eye on heaven, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? That's where my head is at right now. So I can't get too heavily into the Bible. That's what I'm saying to you. But when I talk about throwing your life in a garbage can, I'm hearkening back to my young childhood, I don't know, 5 to 10, when I worked at my dad's antique store on Ludlow Street in New York. Now very fashionable with bars and this and that. It was just a kind of a dump when we were down there, really mean streets. Whatever, he made a living out of it. And in the basement of the store, there were various stalls that the men had where they kept the goods that they didn't bring up, mainly junk, you know, they bought at auction, this and that. I'd go down there to clean the bronzes with the cyanide. You've heard that story before. I'm not going to bore you with it again. But in that basement, in that dank, dark, horrible basement, which had one 20-watt yellow bulb, it may as well have been out of Dickens in that cold, unheated basement where I worked as a little boy. Today, he would have been arrested for child abuse. Thank God he wasn't. I mean, I needed a job. I was glad to make the money. It was better that than staying home and smoking pot with the weaklings, you know. So anyway, I'm down in the basement cleaning the bronzes, and there were big barrels. They were old wine barrels that the men bought for, like, junk. Not wet garbage, but as they'd sort through the stuff they would buy at auction, they'd throw the stuff out that they couldn't sell. Or what did they throw out? What they threw out, I found to be precious as diamonds. Here I am, 8 years old, and instead of working with the rubber apron cleaning a bronze, I'm filtering through the barrel, pulling out life stories. I wish to God I could make a movie of this. I wish I could. Well, I will if I ever do the movie of me. This is going to be a seminal scene. I'm down there. I'm supposed to be working, and I'm taking a break from the dank, from the caustic cyanide solution in Dickens' basement. And I'm going through these barrels that the men threw the stuff in that they couldn't sell. And what's in the barrels? You'd see a whole life story. You'd see a young man who goes to Europe as a composer. And you'd see all of his compositions, his musical writings, handwritten out, in the garbage. And you'd see pictures of him on the dock on the west side as he leaves, waving to the friends. Why, there goes John. He's going over to Europe. He's going to be a famous composer. He's going to be an American in Paris. There he was, waving away. And then you see the sequence of pictures of John, the snapshots that were found in the trunk. There he is on the ship drinking and having a drink. Then he's in Paris and he's having a good time. And as the time goes on, he looks worse and worse. And then there's like nothing, like a dull. And then the manuscripts and Dear Mom, and it's in the garbage, a whole life. Then, of course, I told you about the nun's trunk and what was found at the bottom of the nun's trunk, didn't I? It's in my earlier book, Psychological Nudity. But I'm getting off the track right now.
Savage.